Now, why do you suppose the Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewerage District is out there planting trees? It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent. And have you ever heard of an urban sea breeze? We're spending this hour exploring the best practices for a renewable infrastructure that supports our communities and the other structures that they rely on. So, what do you want to know about the costs and benefits of building a green infrastructure? What are some of the opportunity costs you can see, and can we make it available for all? Your input this morning is welcome at 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. We're at on Twitter at WPR Mornings as well. Our guest this morning, the Vice President of Urban Forestry at American Forests, Ian Leahy. Ian, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And thanks for joining us for the hour this morning. Also joining us, as mentioned before, the Manager of Sustainability at the Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewerage District, Brianne Plier. Good morning, Brianne.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm excited to talk about this because it's our opportunity to reimagine how we see the things that we look past all too often, our infrastructure. And so to begin with, just to set the stage for us, Brianne, would you tell us a little bit about urban heat islands and why that matters to you in Milwaukee?
Sure. So we care very greatly about urban heat islands in Milwaukee. Actually, it really affects the function of our sewer system, which you might not think of. But urban heat islands, we're discovering, are creating some interesting sort of microclimate issues where we're seeing storms stall out over certain portions of our service area. Because we have the Lake Michigan to the east, and so, you know, we're trying to get to zero overflows by the year 2035, and if we're going to do even more than what we have been doing to get to that point, we really need to be cognizant that these microclimates are changing the way that our system functions and causing us some issues with storms.
And not to confuse what we're talking about this morning with the Milwaukee Bucks, what is it that makes Milwaukee so hot?
Well, aside from the Bucks, it is an immense amount of impervious surface. So if you think of concrete roads, parking lots, hot roofs on buildings, driveways, there's just a lot of impervious surface within the Milwaukee area. So that's something that, and that impervious surface not only generates heat, but it also generates a lot of stormwater runoff. So that's where we're sort of crossing that intersection between those two ideas.
So that urban heat island has the potential to create these microclimates that could create challenges for the Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewerage District. Do I get that right, Brianne?
Yes, absolutely.
So then is this, when I say urban sea breeze, is that sort of the climatological effect that brings us these microclimates?
Yeah. We've actually been working on a couple different studies with UW-Madison. We've got some great climatologist researchers there and stormwater professionals that are teaming up together to look at the effect that the lake has in conjunction with this urban heat island of the area of major imperviousness and how that sort of causes storms to, get these oppressive air masses that are hot and wet and how they sort of stall out over certain parts of the city.
So that's why the Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewerage District is planting trees.
Yes, we've got a pretty full-scale suite of what we call green infrastructure. So it's more naturalized ways to mimic stormwater capture function. So prior to development and all that, all that comes with it, we've been really working on developing some stormwater tree programs to improve tree canopy to help sort of cool off the area and soak up some of that stormwater, but also things like bioswales and rain gardens and constructed wetlands to take some of that water that is falling on the land surface and sort of help capture it before it can get into our sewer system.
Brianne Plier is Manager of Sustainability at Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewerage District. And if you've got questions, 1-800-642-1234. We're also joined by Ian Leahy, Vice President of Urban Forestry at American Forests. And Ian, what do the temperature disparities look like between areas with trees versus those largely without?
Yeah, you can really tell tell the wealth and the low-income areas of a city just by flying over and looking at the tree canopy. And on the temperature side, it's basically a 10-degree difference or more. And during the day, it can be 5 to 7 degrees on average, but at night it gets up to 22 degrees difference. And what's happening now as our cities are heating up is we're not getting that body cool down that we used to get as a just a natural part of our rhythm. So, yeah, it just kind of feels like this year it really sunk in that climate change is here and it's reaching that critical mode. And so what we're looking at now are trees is this really fundamental infrastructure to our future.
Is there a limit to how much tree cover can cool a city? Is there such a thing as too many trees?
We're nowhere near that. Right now we're dealing with a significant decline in urban tree canopy cover.
Oh, interesting. Can you account for that, Ian?
It's a combination of development, disinvestment. With trees, you're competing against a lot of different infrastructure, a lot of different very valid interests, with different funding priorities. And, you know, no one would ever say urban forestry has a really intense, powerful lobby behind it. So what we try to do is bring trees as a platform to these other needs. So
yes,
if you're
big tree
education, trying to address crime rates, trying to address stormwater, you know, trees are this infrastructure that can come in and play a critical role.
So as you look at it, and you actually posted a story on Twitter yesterday alluding to this from the Fresno Bee, what accounts for the gap in tree cover in certain areas of cities?
So a lot of research has come out lately that shows it's really systemic. It goes back to policies like redlining that predates the modern era. We call these legacy landscapes. So 1930s, the federal government started putting maps out that drew lines around areas to dissuade mortgage investment. But this also had an impact on infrastructure, on healthcare. And so today we put out this tree equity score tool that has found there's about a 65% difference between canopy in the wealthiest neighborhoods and canopy in the lowest income neighborhoods. And there's about a 33% difference between predominantly white neighborhoods and predominantly black neighborhoods.
You found a correlation between income and trees?
Yes, absolutely.
And you've also found causation there as well, that it sounds like, Ian.
Yeah, so exactly. So what you're dealing with is the systemic infrastructure level where, you know, society in general has not been investing. And the interesting thing about trees is they get to really that deeply personal, individual level. So people without disposable income logically don't have, you know, money to spend taking care of the trees on their property or planting new trees. So it just becomes this widening gap.
And Brianne Plier, as a manager of sustainability at the Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewerage District, how does equity play a role in your sustainability projects?
Well, we really do care a lot about equity here. We serve 28 different communities in the greater Milwaukee area, with the city of Milwaukee being the largest one. And so some of the things that we've been working on doing is we are looking at social vulnerability indexes with our projects, and we're looking at these areas as areas where we can and should invest in green infrastructure, because we do see that green infrastructure not only benefits stormwater, but it has all of these extremely strong ties to other community benefits such as health and aesthetics. And so we care greatly about that. We teamed up recently with the city of Milwaukee to complete a green infrastructure plan for the city of Milwaukee. And that had a very specific focus on looking at greening up urban schoolyards and also greening up parking lots that may be in areas, or even, you know, getting rid of some parking lots that maybe are underutilized. And those have great community benefits. If you can generate new green space where people can enjoy the outdoors, it can help cool off the local environment, and it can also help with stormwater. So we do look a lot into how we can invest our projects in ways that have a greater community impact.
Brianne Plier, Manager of Sustainability at the Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewerage District. Why they're planting trees is an opportunity for us to reimagine infrastructure as we see it in a renewable way. Ian Leahy, also our guest, Vice President of Urban Forestry at American Forest. And here's a pointed question for you. Are there enough trees where you live? And if not, why not? Is extreme heat a concern for you? Do you see Death Valley over the weekend at 130 degrees? That's just the weather. But what about our climate and what's next for us in Wisconsin? You can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Our guests, Ian Leahy and Brianne Plier, continue with us throughout the hour. I'm Lee Rayburn, and this is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. When infrastructure fails, it makes the news. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and it makes the news because failing infrastructure puts lives at risk. Well, and you know this, at the same time, new infrastructure can be considered politically cost prohibitive. But what about renewable infrastructure? What's your cost-benefit analysis here? Who stands to gain, and what might be the unintended consequences of a green infrastructure? 1-800-642-1234 to join our conversation. Email ideas at WPR.org. Our guests, Ian Leahy, Vice President of Urban Forestry at American Forest, and Brianne Plier, Manager of Sustainability at Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewerage District. And Bill's in Rice Lake this morning with a comment. Bill, good morning. You're on The Morning Show.
Good morning.
What do you have to say?
I grew up with a father who worked in urban forestry, and growing up, he always would kind of complain about how the city wouldn't give him enough money to plant trees. And he'd always say that they paid for themselves in sewage costs and in public health costs. And so is that true? Do trees in cities cover the cost of investment?
Ian, Brianne, who would like to start?
Yeah, I can take that one. Generally speaking, it's three times the return on investment. We use a term called ecosystem services. So if the U.S. Forest Service put out this tool called iTree that really calculates these down to very specific numbers. And from every pollution taken out of the air, the stormwater controlled. And so, if we optimized, if we address this tree equity issue, we'd be getting about $5 billion in additional benefits every year.
And Ian, how do you go about measuring tree equity?
So we created our own methodology at American Forest, and it basically weights income, ethnicity, employment, age, and health factors with tree canopy and development density. And then we put that into a scale of 1 to 100 and weighted it based on within the same metro area. So you're not really comparing Albuquerque to Boston. You're comparing the suburbs, perhaps, to a neighborhood in a city, and seeing how those are relative to each other.
And where have you found that tree inequity is the greatest?
So it's pretty consistent. People like to point out the exceptions, like Midtown Manhattan. That's all
Central Park
data. Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, Central Park's in right there. But actually, Milwaukee is one of on our list of one of the biggest cities with the biggest inequities, and they tend to be again in these redlined neighborhoods from the past or places that were developed, with very discriminating policies.
Bree, what parts of the Milwaukee metro area need the most attention when it comes to tree cover, as you see it?
Well, there's a couple different tools that we use. So we use some urban heat island severity maps from the Trust for Public Land. Just thinking off the top of my head, I'm thinking, the near northwest side of the city of Milwaukee and then the south side of the city. There's areas where you've had a history of industrial and residential sort of in zones or mixed together, and those tend to be the areas where we have the greatest hardscape and the least amount of trees.
That's Breanne Plier, Manager of Sustainability at Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewerage District. Ian Leahy, also joining us for the hour, Vice President of Urban Forestry at American Forest. The investment into green infrastructure as an opportunity to save money on the rest of our infrastructure. What do you think of this idea of greening our infrastructure? 1-800-642-1234. What kinds of green infrastructure would you like to see where you live this morning? Bill's in Madison, and he joins our conversation. Good morning, Bill.
Well, hiya. Thanks for having me on.
What do you think?
Well, I just I worked at the Arboretum for years, and their special activity out there is here in Madison, the University of Wisconsin Arboretum is restoring native plant communities. So I just wondered how much thought has been given to focusing on native plants and even possibly native plant communities, plant and animal communities in this a program like the greening that you're talking about.
Yeah, what kind of greening are we doing? Will they be native plants, and will they benefit our native habitats? Breanne?
Yes. All of these. So some of the things that we're really focusing on is trying to get the message across to people in a way that sort of resonates with them. And we find that people are really interested in creating pollinator habitat because we need pollinators to grow food and we, you know, for all of our other plants. And so we have definitely been working quite a bit with trying to incorporate native plants into the green stormwater infrastructure that we are implementing or putting into the ground. We do an annual plant sale with a company called Agricol, where all we sell are native Wisconsin plants. And we are talking to people about those plant communities because it is so important to bring some of that habitat back to these urban areas. But those native plants also have these root structures that are that go so much deeper into the ground and can soak up so much more stormwater than, say, you know, your average ornamentals or the sort of plants that a lot of people want to sort of see in their gardens. So we're trying to shift that narrative to get folks to look at going back to incorporating native plants, not only into green infrastructure, but just also into their general landscaping, because these plants have such a great ability to soak up stormwater and also provide habitat at the same time.
You mentioned the pollinators, and this was brought up from our team in a Wired magazine article, this phenomenon known as botanical sexism, where landscapers tend to favor planting male trees over female trees, which could be responsible for increased pollen counts and worsening allergies. Is pollen factor into what you're doing when it comes to planting new trees?
My gosh, I don't think I've ever heard of that before.
It was new to us, too. So I just wanted to ask as a follow-up, because I was like, that is interesting, certainly enough. Ian, do you know anything about the, what was it called? Botanical sexism from Wired magazine.
So it's a little complicated. Like I'm thinking of the ginkgo tree right now, where there's a male and a female, and you plant to avoid as best you can the smelly fruit. So there are sometimes it's a very strategic decision to plant one gender of trees or another. A lot of people don't know there are genders of trees
right.
To begin with. I haven't heard that study either. That is kind of funny. It's I wouldn't be surprised in the least bit.
Interesting. And it just goes to show that the more we learn, the more we understand there is more to learn about the interconnectedness of all of these things. And by interconnectedness of all of these things, we're talking all the way from the trees to our sewer pipes in our cities. We're talking from our climate and our microclimates and our urban sea breeze to the flooding that we've seen in certain areas and metropolitan areas, most recently in New York City with Tropical Storm Elsa raining. Ian, you mentioned Milwaukee ranking as one of the top 20 large size cities that would stand to gain the most from achieving tree equity. What would be gained?
So the nice thing about trees is the narrative can really be adapted to whatever the needs are, whatever someone's looking for out of it. So what you're really gaining there is from one extreme, positioning urban forests to directly take on climate change. They've long been viewed as an adaptation, as a response, but when you optimize it, they can actually be slowing down climate change directly and in a position of front line, doing so on the front lines of where
the most need is. And then from there, it gets into, we've been talking about stormwater and the cooling effects. Duke University came out with a study that there's about 12,000 heat-related deaths a year in the United States. And that could get up to about 100,000 in the worst-case climate scenarios. So right now, trees are mitigating about 1,200 heat-related deaths a year. They're offsetting about 670,000 fewer acute respiratory illnesses. And so you're getting these direct public health benefits. But then it gets into this kind of psychological realm where...
I'm going to stop you there, Ian, better. And we'll pick this up after the news. I apologize. There's more answer to this question. What are the benefits? What do we stand to gain if we were to start planting trees? Does this sound too simple to you in a world of complicated problems? Are trees a simple step forward? 1-800-642-1234. Our conversation this hour is with Ian Leahy, Vice President of Urban Forestry at American Forest, and Brianne Plier, Manager of Sustainability at Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewerage District. And you as well at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn, and it's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Where we left off, we were looking at what trees could do for Milwaukee and your community, and how trees and greenery can be seen as infrastructure. Not something that has a cost associated with it, but according to our guests, an investment to be made that pays for itself. We were talking about the American Forest's Tree Equity Score, an idea, a measuring tool to figure out where trees are at in your community and who benefits. Where they benefit. Ian Leahy is our guest. And Ian, where we left off, we were sizing up what tree equity could do for Milwaukee and what would be gained from that. And we'd covered climate change, eliminating those microclimates that could create flooding through the urban sea breeze and preventing heat-related deaths. But and I cut you off there. What else?
Well, I was going to say that there's fewer sick days when people have a view of nature out their window. Students do better in school, but a big one is jobs, right? Like these are jobs that they can't be outsourced. The tree is where the tree is, and you know they're living wage jobs to take care of this infrastructure. I used to work for City Forestry Division, and I'd be out at 3 a.m. pulling trees off cars. Like we don't want to sugarcoat that. You know there is a risk factor to this, but the key is maintaining them well, monitoring them, having pest and disease resistant specimens that are propagated. So it gets complicated. It gets into it's a technical forestry world that that gets into a lot of complex realms.
Sure. But how many, just bottom line, as you look at the American Forest Tree Equity Score, how many trees would it take to achieve tree equity in Milwaukee?
Oh, it would take we came out to about 980,000 medium-sized deciduous trees. So that's almost a million more trees in Milwaukee itself.
Also joining us this morning, Brianne Plier. She's the Manager of Sustainability at Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewerage District, and we started the hour explaining why they are planting trees. And obviously, there's costs associated with these things, Brianne, but how do you balance the cost versus the benefits when it comes to planting trees in Milwaukee as you see it?
Well, we obviously have invested quite a significant amount of money into our gray infrastructure. So, our pipes and our plants. And we look at green infrastructure as a supportive network to, that gray backbone that we have. So that's definitely something that, we look at in terms of how are we going to reach our goals of our 2035 vision to get to zero overflows. And also just, as was mentioned earlier, the benefits of the trees. I mean, when you look at the cumulative benefits outside of just the stormwater value, that's really, really important to us. As a government agency, we care deeply about the communities that we serve, and we are very interested in making sure that we're finding infrastructure solutions that are going to above and beyond of just a basic function.
This is a quality of life issue, correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let's go to Jack from Oconto this morning. Jack, good morning. You're on with Ian Leahy and Brianne Plier.
Good morning, and thank you. I'd just like to thank the guest host for the morning show this past week. You guys have been so professional. It's been a breath of fresh air. My question is this. How can we get government to really back these programs so we can get these trees that lower our temperatures and some of the wetlands that would help this flooding? What can we do to influence the lawmakers?
Jack, appreciate the question. The political wherewithal here's an aspect that I think needs to be brought up. These trees don't come fully grown. They take some time to mature. It is an investment up front. So where is the political wherewithal when it comes to moving this ball forward? Ian, I'll start with you, and I also want to hear from Brianne if I can.
Yeah, so it starts on multiple levels. So at the local level, budgets are going, like begging government to allocate more money to the budget is going to have a limited effect. Like there's only so much money to go around. There's some flexibility there, but what we really try to focus on is innovative investing, like impact investing that where you can link tree canopy to, for example, prison recidivism. And, you know, number of people, if a certain number of people, are not returning to the prison system, then, you know, the bond pays itself back. The investment pays itself back. City forest credits is a new, if you're familiar with the voluntary carbon markets, is basically that, but really geared toward an urban environment. And so it's a way to get private sector support in. And then on the federal side, there's a lot, like we've never seen momentum like this. Like it's just
really
in people's heads, like, across the political spectrum, everyone's like, we get it. Trees are this critical infrastructure to save lives as cities are heating up. And so there's a number of, you know, big funding bills working through, like the Trees Act, the Shade Act, infrastructure legislation. You know, who knows where that's going, but, you know, that's a big opportunity that could get a federal infusion that then the local and states could back up with, you know, if for example, the federal investment could plant trees, then we could find these other ways to maintain them over the years.
And Brianne, as you are out there planting trees, the political wherewithal does seem to be there in Milwaukee. Do you have the support you need?
I believe that we do for the most part. Obviously, political leadership is something that makes a huge difference. But I really think that a lot of this comes down to being able to explain the benefits of this not only to political leaders, but just to every individual on how this matters to something that they care about. You know, not everyone necessarily cares about the sewer pipes underground. They don't think about those, but maybe they do care about, their community health or how their community looks. And so I think that's one of the most important parts of our strategy in getting the buy-in for our investment into green infrastructure and trees is to really sort of talk to people about how this affects them directly. That seems to be, I think, the biggest way that we can get collective action, not only by individuals, but also at the political level.
That's Brianne Plier. She's the manager of sustainability at the Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewage District. Also joined by Ian Leahy this morning for the hour, vice president of urban forestry at American Forest. And we'd welcome you to join the conversation as well. Are you out there planting your own trees? Would you like to see a government or another institution join you in your efforts? Or do you see some flaws in this argument? Or do you see this as a cost that isn't worth the benefit? Take your perspective this morning at 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. And Ian, since American Forest have come up with this index now, the iTree Index, can you give us some idea of how our urban areas in the United States have been doing, what the trend lines are, and whether or not we're regaining greenery in urban areas or we're losing it?
So just to be clear, iTree was a tool the Forest Service developed. We've come
Thank
up
you.
With Tree Equity Score that we just released nationwide. It's a free tool. Anyone can go to treeequityscore.org and just look in your community. We have it down to the census block level. But and we partnered with the Forest Service on a study. We basically found the trend lines are by 2060, we'll be losing about 8% of our tree canopy cover if we don't turn around those trends and start reinvesting. in terms of one of the factors we looked at was, you know, percent in poverty versus tree canopy. And generally speaking, you know, the higher concentration of poverty in a neighborhood, we're seeing lower tree canopy counts, and that's pretty consistent across the board. And
I've seen a couple of stories about the tree equity score from American Forests, Ian. One most recently just yesterday that you posted on Twitter from the Fresno Bee about the greenery over Fresno and how you can separate it based on the income, and it's pretty clear. There was another op-ed out of the New York Times last month that asked, and I'm paraphrasing here, are trees only for rich people? And, you know, it sounded kind of harsh at the time, but they had the satellite footage from the tree equity score to show you that there seems to be a connection between wealth and greenery. Correct? Income and greenery?
There absolutely is, yes. And
you can see it for yourself.
You can see it for yourself. You can see it flying over a city, you know, just look down from a plane. You can. It's very obvious, and we do a lot of analyses from satellite image, and then get on the ground and do inventories, and it all backs up that same conclusion.
Ian Leahy, Vice President of Urban Forestry at American Forests, and Brianne Plier, Manager of Sustainability at Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewerage District. Bri, what other forms of green infrastructure beyond trees are you looking at to help address the heat in Milwaukee?
Well, so there's a couple different things. We've been developing several programs over the last 15 to 20 years. One of the programs that I'm most proud of is our Green Seams program. So that was originally developed to assist with flood management, looking at preserving open spaces in upper reaches of the watershed to help protect the lower reaches of the watershed from flooding. So with Green Seams, you know, we purchase easement rights so that those lands can't be developed and they can get restored to be natural open spaces to give rivers back their floodplains. But those also happen to be areas where, you know, you're preserving green space. And so that program has been going really well. We've also been working on a couple different things. We work with the 28 municipalities that we serve on working with them to incorporate green infrastructure into their capital improvement projects. So if they redo a street or they're working at a park or a business park, things like that, we're working with them to install greenery like constructed wetlands, which we desperately need. If you know any history about Milwaukee, we were sort of built on wetlands and they no longer exist where they used to here. So those are some of the things that we're doing. And then we've also been working with individual property owners. We're working with residents, doing one-on-one neighborhood outreach programs. So like I said before, it's really trying to reach the individual so that we can get resident support and buy-in, and then they can sort of move that up the chain. But we've been working with them to plant trees at their homes and plant things like rain gardens to improve more habitat and collect that stormwater. So it's been a really interesting last 15 years here as these programs have sort of developed, but we're really trying to work hard and getting these across the service area so that folks have more greenery and that we can do better with our stormwater.
More greenery and better quality of life. Brianne Plier is Manager of Sustainability at Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewerage District, joined also by Ian Leahy, Vice President of Urban Forestry and American Forests. And there is still time for you this morning at 1-800-642-1234 as we reimagine our infrastructure, not as a sagging old and leaking pipes and wires that we see, but rather a renewable renewable infrastructure that helps aid and abet the rest of our infrastructure. Is this an investment worth making as you see it? What are the opportunity costs that you may find that we have yet to discuss? 1-800-642-1234. Our conversation continues. I'm Lee Rayburn on The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. So what's our worst case scenario here?
It's
the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and according to the research published last year from Duke University, 100,000 Americans a year stand to die prematurely from extreme heat. And again, that might sound harsh, but the researchers put that number around 12,000 right now. We're seeing world record heat today out west, while the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration reports the U.S. just saw its hottest June on record. So, trees? Is this too simple to be believed? Can we really save people's lives just by making their worlds more green? And is it something we can afford to do for all? 1-800-642-1234 is the phone number to join us. Our guests, Ian Leahy, Vice President of Urban Forestry at American Forest, and Brianne Plier, Manager of Sustainability at Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewerage District. Let's go to Virginia from Milwaukee this morning. Virginia, good morning. You're on the morning show.
Good morning to you all. Excuse me, please. Talking about allergies here, mine have been pretty bad, and I'm sure it has a lot to do with the atmosphere, and I have to be very careful. I can't do over-the-counter stuff. I'm talking about where I live on the east side of Milwaukee. Number one, I wanted to talk about your speakers there. I don't know all their names, but they're just excellent in bringing out the the facts of what is happening and how important the trees are to life, to all life, not just human, but animal and certainly plants. And I'm on the east side of Milwaukee. We've got a lot of the condos that are going up, and they can be pretty tall. The thing about it is that I'm on Cambridge Avenue here, and I've seen three trees go down on my very long block in the last 5 years. And then the smaller trees are put up in their place. And, of course, it takes time for trees to grow.
What have you done about it, Virginia?
I see them out my window.
Yeah, what have you done about this?
Are you talking to me?
Yeah.
Oh, what have I done about it?
Yeah.
The Arbor Association, well, I have sent in my payment for a planting of 10 more trees. And I feel good about that. Physically, I'm not able to get down there and to plant the trees, but someone's going to do it.
Yeah.
And there are people who will do it or are willing to do it. And I feel good about it because I feel I am a part of that. Recently, I heard I would say within the last year, you had a guest on your program. And he was, I can't remember his name either right off, but the name of his book was The Hidden Life of Trees.
The Secret Life of Trees.
I got the book,
We've done that on Chapter a Day, which you can, it's a book that changed the way I saw the way we're all interconnected. And it took me into the roots of the trees underground that you never see to show us the ways in which we touch each other that we may never realize. Ian, as Virginia talks about what she can do, let me ask you what we can do.
Yeah, that's a great question. It does begin with, looking and planting trees where they're most needed. Governor Evers has committed to to plant 75 million trees by 2030 with a 1T, a trillion trees initiative pledge for the state. And that includes urban trees and advocating for policies. Like a lot of cities have local ordinances that if a tree does come down, then you have to not just replace it with one tree, but you replace it with the number of caliper inches, which means the diameter of the tree at the trunk, about 4.5 feet off the ground. So there are ways to, we look at this as comprehensive forestry and not just like we have to save this one tree, unless it's a very special, unique tree. But there's ways to manage the forest and development, but also expand your tree canopy cover.
Let's go to Michael from Madison. Michael, good morning. You're on the air with Ian Leahy and Brianne Plier.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I was just curious if there's been any research done in other countries, other cities where we've seen this successful. And I point to one of the hottest places I've been on Earth in August is Shanghai, China. Mm-hmm. And there, from what I understand, there was an effort years and years ago by one of the emperor's wives, I think, that planted good portions of the city, certain trees in certain sections, not all over Shanghai, of course, but it's a noticeable difference. And I was just curious if there's been research into any other global cities where they've seen success.
Yeah, I appreciate the global perspective, Michael. Also want to add a comment from Bill from Madison, who called in to say it's really powerful to get the community involved in green infrastructure. And Bill points to Chicago as doing this well. Brianne Pierre, as the manager of sustainability at the Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewerage District, do you have role models that you are learning from and working with?
We are constantly connecting with our peer organizations to find out what they're doing. We've definitely enjoyed being a part of the Green Infrastructure Leadership Exchange. So that's where we can connect with different cities like New York and Philadelphia and Portland and San Francisco. And so we are learning from what those other folks are doing, and we're sharing the information on things that we're doing with them, because it is really important that utilities start becoming utilities of the future and thinking about these things.
What would the worst case scenario be from your position, Brianne? I'm just curious.
Worst case? Well, I mean, I have two children, and they're young, so I am always concerned about how the climate is going to change and how that is going to affect their lives moving forward, as well as all the other kids that are their age. So worst case scenario to me would be that they're is inaction, and that we don't get far enough and we can't stave off some of the pretty serious problems that are coming down the pike, not just for Milwaukee, but across the globe as a whole. So I would really, really like to see more action and more investment. I think it's not just going to be able to be done by government, but it's also going to take what I always tell my team, every man, woman, and child to sort of jump on board with this and start taking an active role in shaping our communities and our climate.
Ian Leahy, this is about 60 seconds, but can you give us a glimpse of what a best case scenario might look like for us?
Yeah, I think people really need to get their head around what's coming. Like Princeton's Climate Central is projecting that Green Bay will have summers like Miami by the end of the century. Milwaukee will have Sarasota summers. Madison will have Central Louisiana summers. So that's about a 10 to 11 degree difference. And, you know, the urban forest is really a microcosm of our globe. When I was starting off, people looked at me like I was crazy working in urban conservation. You know, the environmental movement was all about protecting land out there from people. And now we know there is no out there anymore. Like the Anthropocene is here, which means like we are driving the outcome, ecological outcomes of this planet. And so if we can solve this at the local level, where all these systemic, you know, racist policies are still very present with us, if we can figure that out and reconnect with nature at that fundamental level, I think we have a great shot at solving this globally.
Ian Leahy, thank you so much for your time and wisdom this morning.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.
Brianne Pierre, appreciate the work in Milwaukee, and I'm sure we will keep up with you and talk again, so I appreciate your time as well.
Great. Thanks for having me on.
Ian Leahy, Vice President of Urban Forestry at American Forest. Brianne Pierre, Manager of Sustainability at Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewerage District, with a reimagining of what infrastructure can look like for us. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.